all is right in the world when Australian rugby has two wins out of three matches against New Zealand opposition. You don't often see it, Matt Tamua, but that is indeed the result off the back of an impressive round, enjoyable round, the final, the third and final round of four matches across the weekend. But Matt, Crusaders right at the bottom of the Super Rugby table off the back of the Force beating them.
Yeah, who would have thunk it, eh? It's, Force were good too. Force, I thought that was clearly their best game. They've showed glimpses of it. They've showed, you know, patches first half and a few collapses early in the season. But they'll be very happy by that because, as I said, I thought they played well. Crusaders are obviously struggling, and it still kills me to this day. I played for a long time and only ever beat them once, and teams now are just beating them for fun. So it's a new era.
Well, Nick White apparently just registered his first win against the Crusaders, if you can believe that.
Yeah, I actually messaged him straight after the game. I wasn't aware of the official stats, and I just said, mate, I reckon that might be your first one. I said, my memory's not very good, to be fair. And he goes, yep, that's all of them ticked off now. So he might be retiring later this week. We'll see.
Well, the other extraordinary thing on the weekend, the Queensland Reds 31-0 over the Highlanders. You said last week that they might win by 40. I thought, hang on, that's perhaps a little bit over the top with Fraser McWright and Tate McDermott not being there. But hey, tip of the hat, you got a tip right for once.
Yeah, I know, one out of how many. I said they'd put 40 on them. I what I was meaning to say was that they would beat them by about 30-odd points. But no, they were good. They were really good and dominant. Very too often in these games, you see the Kiwi teams actually being the team that's really direct and the Aussie team being a bit lateral, but it was a complete flip script. Reds were really strong. And, a lot of players got some good minutes as well. So, yeah, good to see.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking a fair bit about Super Rugby, of course. The Blues, far too good for the Brumbies. That's concerning for them, and Stephen Larkham. The Hurricanes, their next opponent, they're unbeaten. They're the first side this year to go to Fiji, come away with a win. But before then, we're going to actually check in with a bit of a long-lost Australian representative, a guy that was part of a Wallaby squad that you featured in 2020, that man, James Ram, and later on Alex Hodgman, who will be preparing to take on his former side in the Blues when the Reds host them this weekend too. So a lot on this edition of the Raw Rugby Podcast. Matt, you've got World's Best Dad in your title here. What's going on?
I think it might be a Raw Rugby first. I actually had my daughter on the front pack, but you know, nowadays with our kind of new and improved male stuff, you know, kids at work, and so I just thought I would set the standard. But I'm forking up something chronic. I've just taken her off now, and I've got sweat everywhere. So yeah, just learning as we go.
Mate, this is what it's all about, throwing yourself in the deep end, and good to have Kiara with us for the pod. Hey, big weekend of Super Rugby. We spoke about it just a second ago, touched on it anyhow. Two wins for Aussie sides. That's a really big thing for the game to get some confidence against trans-Tasman opposition. It hasn't always been that way. Once again, though, it's the Highlanders, it's the Crusaders, it's the two sides towards the bottom, but you'll take it, won't you?
I don't think anyone can get picky. Look, you beat the Crusaders. There's no fine print or asterisks in the record books. And context isn't taken into consideration in that sense. So, and two really good performances, I thought, as well from the Reds and from the Force. The Force were great, and it didn't start great. I thought seeing the Crusaders' first try, I thought, oh no, here we go. This could be a long night, but they fought their way back. They controlled the game really well. I've been quite critical of their game control in the past. But the way that they control things and having guys like Michael Wells and that coming off the bench and having a little bit of experience around those crucial minutes, I thought was really good for them.
You start to resemble a super side, don't you, when you have Michael Wells and Isaac Rodder come off the bench and you're not just pulling on someone that's just rocked up the week before into camp?
Yeah, yeah. Look, and I think teams like, you know, the Waratahs would just be spewing at that kind of that depth, considering the struggles they've been through. But yeah, it is, and we need to have strong benches. The bench plays such a huge role in the modern game, very much so at the international level. But you're seeing it start to filter down to the provincial level. You know, often the criticism of Australian teams is, oh, we're not fit enough because we fall away in the last 20. But when half your team's off the bench, it's more often a fact of our depth. You know, we don't have that depth in the last 20, so we have to keep guys on longer, you know, and it just doesn't work out. So to see that starting to come up, you know, you're talking about closing the gap and just slowly just getting some guys off the bench who can play some good rugby, who are experienced players, it's very handy.
There were two key moments in that second half that I thought, one of them, Isaac Rodder's steal, really crucial when the Crusaders had been camped down in the Forces half for a while. But the second run was the kick chase off the back of a turnover. Ball goes through the hands. It wasn't necessarily pretty through the forwards, but it got to Ben Donaldson out wide. He hoofs it down the field. Levi Moore's got a fair bit of pressure on him, passes it to Maka Springer, and then you've got Tom Horton and Michael Wells first there to force a breakdown turnover penalty. The force kick to touch, and then they scored two quick tries to seal a really comprehensive win. That's fitness, that's tenacity, that's how you build an identity at a team, by being defensively strong. That'll please Omicron so much.
Yeah, the big moments, you know, and it's very easy to look at games and kind of look at them at these, you know, small kind of little not connected, you know, things, but sometimes moments are bigger than other moments. And to have, you know, a fit Michael Wells fresh coming off the bench, you know, chasing down that kick, to have Donaldson kicking goals from, you know, 40, 45 out, when, you know, those converting those opportunities are really big. And I think seeing Donaldson kick those goals as well, for me as a fly half or former fly half, they're kind of test match moments a little bit. You know, you probably don't see Carter Gordon because of the Rebels game plan. You don't see him taking those shots at goal. The Rebels will always go to line, but to see someone like Donaldson, you know, hitting those goals and having that pressure, that game control and understanding the, you know, the importance of that moment really bodes well for future selection in higher honours.
That's a really good point. Hey, one of your former teammates, Kirtley Beall, made a really remarkable return. It was probably for what he didn't do on the field that stood out. He was just really clinical in everything that he did, and that's not always been something that was spoken about Kirtley, but were you surprised at how well he returned?
No, I was excited. I don't know about surprise. I was really happy in a way, like just really happy for him. He's a guy who you just love, like, and there's not many people, you know, everyone who plays with Kirtley absolutely enjoys it, loves it. He's a team man. And to see him come back, as you say, to see him kind of under player's hand at certain instances, but then really inject some speed and some, you know, he got a couple of line breaks, connecting well with Donaldson, to hear Nick White speak about his leadership role within the team. It's really cool. Like, it's a matured man, and it's good for Australian rugby.
I'll tell you what, of all the golden oldies, people might have been thinking Quade Cooper, Bernard Foley. Joe Schmidt won't be looking to Japan as much this year. He'll be probably looking in his own backyard, and someone like Kirtley delivering that sort of performance, a guy that can play 10, 12, 15. It's just a nice reminder, early doors, but a nice reminder about his pedigree.
It's a nice little, and it's, you know, I could be biased saying this, but it's a nice little reminder as well to see guys like Michael Wells, Sam Carter, Nick White, and Kirtley, you know, some guys who are a bit further past the age of 30, but seeing their role in teams, particularly in Australian rugby. I think we're very much, you know, always contracted younger. But Simon Cron's really gone after some other fellows who are a little bit older, and seeing that and seeing the role that they can have in the team, it's really cool. I think, you know, if you look at a team like the Tars, you know, they could really do with it with a few more of these kind of guys, you know, helping and bringing everyone through. So it's nice seeing there's still a role for those guys in the team.
Well, big win, a big match ahead for the Force. Double points is what they were saying post-game against the Highlanders this weekend coming. But a side that just beat the Highlanders is the Queensland Reds, and one of their stars joining us right now. Alex Hodgman, so good to have you on the podcast. Welcome. Thanks for coming on the Raw Rugby Pod.
Cheers. Thanks for having me, brothers. Appreciate it.
It's a Monday. You've just finished training. You had a good win on Friday night. How's the body? You've just come back from an injury as well.
Yeah. For me, it's always awesome. As you guys would know, like having a first game back or second game back, you're still a bit sore, shoulders a bit sore, neck a bit sore in the scrums. And for me, it's, but rebuilding that confidence. So.
I'll tell you what, I don't know what that's like, Alex. I have no idea, and that needs to be laid out crystal clear. My back occasionally gets sore from typing, but that's about it.
The brain's off operation.
How have you found your transition over into Australian rugby, into the Reds? I know, the Reds have always traditionally been known as a team that has so much promise and so much younger talent, and to see someone like yourself come into the team, with a wealth of experience. And how's your role been, in comparison to being at the Blues or the Crusaders beforehand, and how have you enjoyed it?
To be honest, what's awesome is the coaching staff. They enable myself to input when I need to, and what's awesome is that they have a full understanding of where they want to go with the group. And then for me, it's how can I apply my knowledge in these certain areas so it doesn't step on their toes, but then it also makes the group better, if that makes sense. So.
Let's just expand a bit on that. 31-0 over the Highlanders on the weekend. It comes off the back of three defeats. And I imagine the public start to go, oh, hang on, are the Reds nearly as good as we thought they were or not? Can you bring us into some of the messaging with Les Kiss and the Reds coaching staff around how that message was controlled and ensuring that the confidence is still there?
I think what was good was because he's really strong on his belief, and he really believes in the team and the direction we want to play. And for us, it was kind of just owning your personal role. And then each moment we came together, we just talked about what's your job in that moment and how can you do it the best that you can. So for us, it was quite simple when you nail down what's truly important to you as a player and how you can influence the game in that moment. So, and I think our mentality throughout that whole week, we nailed it compared to how we had been against the last three games where we tripped over in those last minutes. So.
Very much the kind of the yardstick that we measure ourselves upon in Australia is how we go against the Kiwis, and having yourself or someone like Jeff Tumung-Allen who grew up and played against these guys, do you feel an increased responsibility when you play against the Kiwi guys to say to the lads, listen, they've only got two legs, they're just like us or whatever? Do you notice that kind of increased responsibility in those matches?
I feel like those conversations have been had for a long time, like within the group. So for myself and Jeff, it's how can we keep this energy alive within this group when things go bad or when things are going right? How do we keep that flow, and how do we continue to hey, let's go back to our process instead of we're getting too hyped up in this moment, we're getting too excited, and then we throw like a silly pass or we do things that are out of character. So for us, it's kind of, okay, how can we regather this group and how can we bring that energy when we need to? So,
this weekend, another New Zealand opposition, and it's pretty important for you. It's up against your former side, the Blues. Has the messages already started, the sledging between the two camps? Have you been copying anything yet?
Nah, so, man, I'm a Reds guy. That's the thing. So, but as you know, you have your time for me, I had my time at the Blues, and but for me, I'm fully committed to here and our vision and what we want to achieve. And for us, I can't go into game plan, but it's pretty awesome at the moment. So, yeah.
Well, and it's very clearly working. I think, the Reds at home in Suncorp is a different, proposition very much so. And I'm actually keen to put your other hat on when you were a Blues member. And Eden Park, like for Australian rugby players, for Australian supporters, it's horror. Like, you know, I have PTSD from there. You saw the Brumbies play there on the weekend. Very uncharacteristic errors. What is the home ground advantage, whether it be there or whether it be at Suncorp? What do you think as a player is the difference? Because, you know, from a viewer's perspective, it's very evident.
I think there's just like a certain pride you hold. Like for myself growing up in Auckland and going to like watch NPC games and then watching the Blues play and then finally getting my opportunity to play for the Blues, like I didn't want to let my city down. And there was just like this feeling of like a fortress. And like when you put on the jersey, you're like, you've been given a gift. And like when you've been given that gift, you want to do it to the best of your ability. And you don't want to let your family down and you don't want to let your friends down and all these amazing fans who support you. And like I remember guys like they'd fly over to our away games. And like for me, that was special. And I was like, man, I don't want to let these people down. And then now that I've moved to Suncorp, I can like feel the passion, eh? And there's something special about Queensland and just the people here. They're like, they fully believe in you. And like as a player and as a person, like it just raises your spirits and you're like, man, I'll do anything for this group. And then when you look at the group, you're like, man, I love these dudes. Oh, sorry.
That's okay in the modern age. Don't worry.
Yeah, it's all good now. you'd put your body on the line for them and like, yeah, and that's what I've felt since coming back into the group. I'm like, man, these guys are, I can see them putting that and I want to do that for them. And yeah, so it's kind of like you put your own expectations higher than, you know, what other people think, and you want to get to those standards and you want to do these things. And when you succeed, man, it's the greatest feeling ever. So
it's nice to hear you, like, you know, because in the question before you're talking about process, whereas clearly now you're talking about an emotional connection and element, and that clearly motivates you to do things a bit further.
Yeah, of course, man. Like I brought my family over here to Brisbane, and like I want to give them the best lifestyle that they can have. And for me, it's, man, that's just playing my heart out. That's making sure I do all my work. All my I's and cross all my T's, and then when I get that opportunity and the coaches believe in me, I don't want to let them down. So
I might ask you in a moment around what you think is coming this week, having played for the Blues, but just on the Eden Park, you played a test match there. It might have been one of your first games, perhaps your debut at Eden Park against the Wallabies. Did you feel that expectation even more? And did you feel a sense, like, was it different at all, knowing that it's 1986, the last time the Wallabies beat the All Blacks at Eden Park? Did you feel anything different, or was that expectation a powerful thing in a positive way when you ran out for the All Blacks that day?
I think for me it was kind of just believing in myself, because there's a lot of great players that they could have chosen, and they chose me, and they put that, you know, they gave me the black jersey. And for me, it was like, I'm not worried about the opposition. Like, I'm more focused on how can I influence this moment. And I felt like when I came on, I did a pretty good job. But like anything, you know, you got to re-earn that jersey. And that's the thing, you know, like, you know, is that like it can be given to you, but it can also be taken away. And for me, it was just, I want to live this moment out. My family's here. My friends are here. And yeah, I just want to give it everything I can. So when I look back, I'm like, man, I gave it everything that day, and I can tell my kids about this. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. As I say, rent's due every week, isn't it? And you got to prove yourself all the time. It's nuts. But, like, I don't know about you, but, you know, I know for in Australia, when we have a game at Suncorp, it guys get a little bit more excited. You know, we feel a little bit more confident. Is that the way – with the Kiwis, like when you know you're playing at Eden Park, I know facing New Zealand, it was always a different proposition than say it was in Dunedin or Westpac. Eden Park just seemed to have, there always just seemed to be more behind it.
Yeah, man, like I think there's just a lot of history there. You know, there's a lot of great history. And I think knowing that you're that guy in that jersey, you don't want to let it down. And I feel the same way when I go to Suncorp now. Is man, there's so many great games that have been played there, and there's so many great players who have put their jersey on. And I just want to do those guys proud and unwear that jersey with, you know, like, yeah. I just don't want to let it down. That's the thing, eh? So
Alex, the Blues are coming this weekend, your former side, Saturday evening, Anzac clash. It's going to be a cracker. Not many sides have been able to handle Vern Cotter's pack. They look like they're going through teams more, a bit of a Northern Hemisphere influence, I'd say. It looks like a test match kind of influence, bashing teams up through the middle before going wide, and there's plenty of threats out there. How do you, as the Reds, adjust to knowing what's going to come at you, and then how do you think you're going to actually be able to stop it?
I think for me it's physicality. Like, I was watching their game against the Brumbies, and I was like, you know, I was getting jittery. I was like, man, I want to be in those moments. I want to try and dominate those collisions. But as a group, it's once again, like, not getting sucked into those moments and being like, hey, like, what's our game plan? Which I can't go through, but what's our game plan, and how can we execute it the best? So, and what I like about that group is they are very physical, and it's actually, it's going to their strengths as a pack. So for us, it's how can we nullify that strength? And no doubt I reckon it's going to be one of the best games this season. So
I think we're all very excited to see it. And as Christy mentioned, it's Anzac weekend. I was born and raised in Australia, but I have a Kiwi heritage. Will you be singing both anthems? How do you find that? Like, I always found that, not odd, but, you know, it's very much the modern day player. We have kind of a connection with Australia, you know, myself, Samoa. But, you know, playing in these games, it must be like, you must be singing two anthems almost.
I remember on my All Blacks debut when the anthem was playing, I didn't actually sing because I like to be in the moment and I like to feel the moment. And I felt like if I heard myself singing, I was like a bit tone deaf. But
I think, weren't 660 singing it as well? So you'd probably ruin it if you sung it with them.
You just got to appreciate the free concert. So for me, I kind of feel like just take that moment and just embrace it as much as I could. And I kind of feel like I'll do the same this weekend where it's a massive game, you know, Anzac. And I can't even talk about the sacrifices and stuff because obviously, like, they're amazing people and what they did for us. And for me as a player, it's just trying to make sure that I embrace that moment when it comes. So, man, there's a lot of moments I'm talking about, but that's kind of how I live my life.
Yeah, you're an emotional being. It's good. It's great to see. I know that you're not going to say I deserve selection. Wallabies is still a few months away, but when there's a guy like an Angus Bell who gets injured, which is really disappointing for him to see, it allows opportunities, presents opportunities for others. Is that something that, you know, being able to return to the park recently off the back of an injury, international rugby, Wallabies eligible, you are. Is that something that you're still very much keen on doing and getting back into that international game?
It's a tough one because I'm still, in my mind, I'm still not playing to my full capacity yet or my full potential. Like, I looked at the game and I found there were a lot of flaws in my game. Then I'm like, oh, I want to work on those things first before I even think about, you know, the next step. So I think what's good in this group here at the Reds is there's so much competition where if I start looking too far ahead, someone's going to slip under me and take my spot. So it's, yeah, I understand what you're saying in terms of, man, hey, someone's down, I can go. But for me, I just want to really nail my finer details because, yeah, I'm still not quite there in my mind. So,
well, there's many games this weekend that are going to be ones to look for out for this weekend, but the Reds and Blues on Saturday evening, it's not going to be too many that top that one. Thanks for coming on. All the best this weekend, and really nice to touch base with you and then have you join the pod.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
good to speak to Alex Hodgman, and he's a guy that I'm sure will be entering the Wallabies discussion if he can stay on the field. He's got good work rate, good feet at the line, and a guy that loves the ruck, and that's what Joe Schmidt's sides are all about, ruck speed and getting quick ball for their backs. It's going to be an awesome game this weekend. What do you think the Reds, 31-0 over the Highlanders, that's not necessarily a barometer because the Highlanders are struggling. They're not in the great space. But what do they need to do this week against the Blues to ensure that they stay in the fight and do something the Brumbies weren't able to last week?
I think what you said there, the fight, it is going to be physical. You saw how the Reds beat the Highlanders, and sure, it's not a great barometer, but, you know, they can only play the team that's in front of them. So it is a good start. The Reds were so direct, even without a guy like Tate. You know, you saw Kalani Thomas having a few snipes. Saw a few guys picking, and I think that really direct game is what's going to do it. And ironically, that's actually how the Blues beat the Brumbies. They were just physically dominant, and it was very, very evident. And that kind of home team, you know, they kind of batten down the hatches a little bit and just go through you. And I don't think there's going to be any secrets, and now it's going to be one.
I think there's two players to me, maybe three players that if I'm a Reds player wanting to play for the Wallabies, you need to step up this game, and that's Ryan Smith, I think Harry Wilson and Hunter Paisami. Those three guys are perhaps on the fringe for someone like a Smith. Physicality is something that he said he needs to work on. He's not the biggest guy, but he hits rucks, and that's important. Those three in particular, do you think that I'm on the right path there?
I think with Tate gone, with Fraser gone, that's kind of your emotional heartbeat of the team. And look, I'm sure we might speak about it later. You know, in Australian rugby, we really need some second rowers who have got some grunt and who can really impose themselves physically. So I'm sure that's where a guy like Smith will be thinking. I thought Hunter was really good on the weekend. He was kind of that triple threat 12, which kind of gone away from a little bit, but I thought it was really good to see, you know, passing, kicking, running, and it'll be good to see him do it against, you know, a strong Blues backline.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. They've got threats all over the park. But someone like a Hunter, some people like what he offers, the punch in the midfield. Others probably bemoan the mistakes in his game, perhaps a little bit loose at times with his handling. Where do you see Hunter Paisami in the conversation of Test footy?
I think he has to be right up there. The thing I like about Hunter is it would have been really, really easy for him as a physically, you know, strong player to kind of not try and grow his game. And I think the error here or there is him trying to grow his game. Like, he's kicking a crossfield kick probably the wrong way around to Sully on the weekend. You know, he's doing a nice little short ball. And I think, there are going to be a few growing pains. He's going to develop as a player. But to have that skill set, I think, will pay dividends down the track. And he's probably in the similar vein as like a Tom Wright. Do you want him to go really quiet and just become like a kind of average beige player? And they're not those kind of guys. They're guys who want to be game breakers. And I think, I am a very, very big fan of Hunter. And I think, I just really like the fact that he's developing other parts of his game and he's not just become this one-dimensional player. I think of a guy like Mutton Nonu. He was a huge, you know, runner, and then he developed a short kicking game. He developed a really good passing game, and it grew things. So I think, it'd be great if Hunter could go along that path, I'm sure. But, it's good. I think he'll definitely be in the conversations later on.
And the other thing about Hunter's game over the weekend against the Highlanders was he underplayed it at times. He jumped into first receiver a lot. You saw a bit more distributing. He took ownership of the game, and maybe that's something he hasn't always done effectively.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good point, and that you're saying in terms of him underplaying it, because that's, you know, the tendency when you are, say, very direct or whatever, is to try and prove that you're not and go a little bit too wide or a little bit too chip kicky. But to see Hunter, as you say, go to first receiver, just play up the next guy and not necessarily look for the try scoring opportunity instantly is a huge growth in him, and it shows that mentally he's probably starting to grow a bit. And I think it's exciting things.
Really devastating for Jordan Bataille. Left around that half-hour mark, I think it was. And my understanding is he'll probably miss the next 3 months, so he won't need a full-on contraction. But that's a big blow, and with him and his future not quite sorted, it may, you know, if you're Joe Schmidt and you're thinking about Wallabies, it just leaves a little thing going, well, he's not playing consistently at the moment. He's not going to be around for a little while. If he's going overseas and that, or if he's changing codes, that's still to play out, then maybe I'll look elsewhere. But it's a big blow for Jordan, and disappointing because he's had so many injuries over the ever since he made his debut, I think, in 2017 for the Reds.
Yeah, it really has. It's he's had, you know, obviously a family member of mine, so I don't really want to, you know, I'm biased in that sense, but I like Jordan at 13, and to see him at 13 on the weekend, I was actually a little bit excited. I feel that's probably his best position because it allows him to assert himself physically, both defense and attack. You saw him, you know, in 30 minutes hold up a guy and they get a turnover. And I know as an attacker, I don't want to be running down Hunter Paisami and Jordan Bataille, you know, in the centers. And I don't know if we've always had that kind of fear in Australian rugby in our midfield. And so, yeah, it is disappointing. And look, I'm sure he'll come back stronger and strong. Unfortunately, it's something that he's had to do many, many times. But yeah, it's a little bit disappointing. But as I said, I'm sure he'll come back.
It's interesting you say you think his best spot could be at outside centre. I don't disagree with you either. The ability to shrug off defenders, he did that even back, I think, in 2020. Richie Mwanga was just thrown away. And you know, he played quarterfinal in 2019 in the number 13 spot, and Eddie Jones similarly saw him as very much of a part of his team in the outside centre position.
Yeah, I think it allows Jordan to play a little bit more instinctual rather than, say, a fullback. I think fullback's got a bit more, you know, tactical nous depending on the good problem you've got with Jordan is he can play everywhere. You know, from 12 out, he can play it at a international level. That's been proven. But yeah, I just think instinctually it allows him to just play a bit more instinctually. It allows him to assert his physical dominance because he really is such a physically dominant player. And I like that. I think he's a really good defender. Sure, he can kick as well. But for me, that doesn't mean, therefore, you go throw him at fullback. I think, I like him close to the action. I like him really getting amongst the tough stuff. But, yeah, hopefully it's not long before we're seeing that. But as I said, it's a good issue to have to say, oh, geez, I don't know where I fit in the Wallabies back line because there's options.
yeah, you're not wrong. Anyway, best of luck on his recovery. It's a big blow, particularly with Josh Fluke. He might be touch and go this week. But if you're losing two of your outside centres, it's going to stretch them. The good news is Lawson Crichton had one of his stronger performances when he jumped in at 12. And I think that was encouraging to see. We know Paisami can play at 13 as well. Tarjan, another guy there. So a few more options still available. James O'Connor, probably not too far away either. Might not have the gas to be at 13 anymore, but the Blues, they're going to be such a big effort for the Reds. They were far too good for the Brumbies, 46-7. Did you see that coming?
Not to that extent. I thought this Brumbies team maybe just had a little bit more underbelly. But at the same time, mate, I've been a part of many teams who've gone to Eden Park and had our pants pulled down. Yeah, it really was. There are quite a few things that were a little bit concerning. Caleb Clark just running over Noah for a try like that. You know, if I'm an All Blacks team and Noah's at 10, I'm going to run Caleb Clark at him because I know I can score. You know, there are a few things that, yeah, a few uncharacteristic errors as well. Little, you know, just before halftime, the little kick that goes out on the full and essentially gives them but yeah, I don't want to be too kind of critical because Eden Park does that to you. It's an odd place. It's very, very hard to play. And, you know, a Blues team is good anyway, but they're exceptional at Eden Park. And I think you saw that.
It's a really good point you make. I tend to think off the back of the Chiefs' heavy defeat in round two, heavy defeat to the Blues, this one against the Hurricanes, which is the other strong New Zealand side, this weekend they're going to host them, afternoon footy, Saturday afternoon. It's a game that they need to ensure, the Brumbies, that they rock up, that they deliver, because I think it's almost three strikes and you're out. And if you know a Lolasio or a Ryan Lonergan, you've got to step up and show what you're there to be counted for. Otherwise, he's just saying to Joe Schmidt, I can't handle those big games against physical oppositions.
Yeah, yep. And look, we saw the Brumbies play amazing against Minor a few weeks ago. And, you know, you see Tom Wright and Noah doing really, really well. And these games do hold a little bit extra value, I think. I'd like to see, I know it's a very minor point, but tactically I'd like to see the Brumbies shift Corey to the left wing. I know on the weekend he wore 11, but he was wearing the right wing. You know, traditionally your left winger gets more opportunities because he's coming off a right-hand pass. So you get, you know, usually you put your best finisher on the left side, and you probably saw early in that half, Ollie Sapsford didn't quite have the gas that Corey did to finish that try. So I'd like to see them switch him. I'm not sure why that was the case. But, you know, as I say, it's minor things. It's got to be physical. And Hurricanes have just, there's a reason they're undefeated. Physically, they have been amazing this year. They've bullied every single team. And, you know, it'll be a different proposition in Canberra. But the Brumbies will have no, you know, they'll know what's coming for sure.
Just on the decision making and the tactics as well, the first half they had five entries into that 22. They had multiple inside the opening 20 minutes when the game was there to be taken. And I've seen Wallabies teams miss and fail to be able to take those 3 points on offer when they're shooting at goals, and it just compounds, and it felt like it compounded for the Brumbies on the weekend. But how do you go to Eden Park and decide, I'm going to take a quick tap, you know, straight off the back of a yellow card? Why wouldn't you go to set piece there, Matt? And something that's typically been a really strong attribute of the Brumbies in the last decade.
Yeah, maybe it's a little bit of a, you know, Brumbies trying to reinvent themselves. You know, I don't know if the set piece is as strong as it used to be. You saw the Brumbies turn down a maul opportunity, go down the front, and then, you know, get knocked the ball on as a 22 entry. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's a trying to grow the game. I don't know if it's a not a huge trust in things gone past. As I said before, often the thing about Eden Park is, you know, when you watch a highlights package of a game at Eden Park, you'll see offload, step, whatever, in minute 50, minute 70, but it is always direct, physical. And any time that I've gone close there or I've only won one game there, it's through boring, physical, you know, really direct stuff. And I think that's often where we go wrong, is we think it's going to be this, you know, game of, you know, step and offload and whatnot. But the Kiwis at the breakdown are the best in the world. And that's often where it's, you know, the tone is set for sure.
Yeah, I think they missed Alan Alatoa, his leadership there. But it's a game that you want to forget, but it might be one that Joe Schmidt remembers for quite a while when he starts to sit down in the months to come. But
did you notice Kale at centre at the end of the game? I found that interesting. You know, in the last year or so, with Eddie's very much been about, you know, trying a few guys at, you know, sevens players or whatnot.
Dylan Peach, you know, in the back row, or Josh Kemley on the wing.
Yeah, yeah. I saw Kale at centre at one point, and I was like, oh, that's very interesting. You know, when you start talking about Wallabies and you start talking about, okay, is he better than, say, a Siruuru? I don't know. But if he's a guy off the bench on a 6-2, who knows, you can play in the back line, that's a little feather to your cap, I reckon.
That's one to do a bit more probing on and keep your eye out. That's great analysis. And this is why you get paid the big bucks, Matty.
The huge bucks, mate.
they certainly aren't, but That's interesting regarding Kale, because if you think about the Wallabies at the moment, there's not too many big ball running 12s. Like Hunter's not big, I wouldn't say, but he hits really hard.
Mm.
But it's an area where if you're wanting gain line advantage as well, that's something that we know. We've even spoken about Michael Hooper in the past. Could he have been in one of a 12? And
I think we've seen the moment with the last World Cup with South Africa really being quite brave in their selections with the 7-1 bench and having guys like, I think it was a Dion Faree who can play, you know, in the front row, but he also plays back row. And sure, he's got history of doing so, but like that's really interesting. I think we might see a bit more kind of creativity in that space. And, you know, I'm by no means suggesting that Kale will be selected at starting 12, but if he's on the bench and you go, oh, you know, should we go 6-2 or a 5-3? And you can go 6-2 knowing he can play in the back line. As I say, it's a huge feather in your cap. It's a big asset to have as a player. I think sevens has really changed that, and having the ability to have, you know, tackle, pass, breakdown, all those skills really helps in that area.
Well, that would be a fair bit of innovation from the Brumbies, and it's something that you like to see more of. They're up against the Hurricanes this week, and we know that the Brumbies have a really good record against the Hurricanes. They knocked them out of the quarterfinals, I think, in the last 2 years, both at home. So
controversially.
Yeah, very controversially. Artie Sevilla still got he's still seething
still
from
filthy.
That one. Yeah. And his Kobe side didn't have a great weekend either on the Japanese League One over the weekend. Finals sorted for that season, it looks like, mathematically anyway. So wouldn't rule the Brumbies out this week, but it's going to be a big one, and it's a really big game for those fringe Wallabies. And right across the board, the Waratahs and the Chiefs are going to be playing as well. That's a massive game. It's a huge game for guys like Will Harrison to be able to see if he can back it up. But the forward pack particularly, your Ned Hannigans, your Lockie Swintons, they've got to continue to do the business. I think you'll see Mark Nwangwe-Niyawasi come back. I wouldn't be surprised if there is a bit of a tweak to that back line.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a huge game in the context of the Wallabies, because it's the first time this year that there'll be five Trans-Tasman fixtures, with the Rebels also heading across the ditch to the Crusaders.
Yeah, look, I think you're spot on. It is a bit, and some games do mean more, and these do, you know, like, yeah, Waratahs, amazing effort against Crusaders, but, you know, Chiefs at home, big game. Brumbies, you know, Moana at home a few weeks ago, really good performance, great, but Hurricanes at home, like, these are games that we need to start winning, and I'm glad that we're getting picky with which Trans-Tasman games we want to win now, because in the past we would just take any, but yeah, I think these games do mean more, and they're evenly matched. It's fair to say that the Brumbies have been the top side in Australia for quite a while, and they're against the top side in New Zealand at the moment at home. So it's a game that if they have ambitions to be champions, that you want to win.
And it's a very warm welcome to James Ram. James, so good to have you on the program. I know that Northampton's been going extremely well, mate, but just speaking to you for a hot second beforehand, what's going on with your accent?
Oh, gosh. I get this all the time. I think I sound very Aussie. I think I'm still...
You don't. You definitely don't.
Oh, yeah. Look, product of your environment, aren't you?
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. So for those that don't know James, part of Dave Rennie's, one of his inaugural squads in 2020 with the Wallabies, but you found yourself at Northampton. You left in 2022 and you've been kicking goals left, right and centre. And another one on the weekend, 40-17... The Saints beat Dan McKellar's Leicester Tigers. Let's just start there for a second. That's a great win, but it consolidates you guys at the top of the table of the English Gallagher Premiership. That's a massive one for your ambitions of finishing minor premiers, right?
Yeah, huge. The Leicester game's our derby week, really. So it's massive for us, and they got it over us earlier in the season. So we thought, you know, we own one at least. It was a packed out stadium, and Derby Week the fans love. So it was unreal to get that win.
Yeah, I know it's a huge rivalry, the East Midlands Derby. I still remember back in the day going to Asda and people would be talking to you about the game. They would love it. You probably shop at Waitrose though, I'm assuming. Ram. But no, mate, oh, big win. Yeah, they're huge games, and it's kind of hard to compare it to anything over here, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it is really different. I think just like the amount of history that the two clubs have and their proximity to each other, you know, makes it so sort of, it is a bitter rivalry. And yeah, and like I said, sort of the stadium being packed out, and they're not massive stadiums, but it feels like there's such an atmosphere there. And it's really enjoyable to play in front of that.
Hey, why did you end up going overseas? Because Matt had already been to a World Cup by the time that he decides to head to the Tigers. Why you and a fair bit earlier in your career, you would have been only no older than 23 by the time you left.
Yeah. I'd always thought I'd play overseas at some point, and honestly thought it would be back end of career to go in and try something different. But the opportunity came up, and I just had sort of a season full of injuries. I think I did three or four things back to back. Sort of my first game back, I'd do something different. And I'd had a year like that 2 years prior. So I just hadn't had much game time. And sort of what the Premiership offers over here is plenty of games. I think this season, as an example, I sort of did my knee. I was out for 3 or 4 months and played 5 games before that and have the ability to come back and play about 12, which is an entire Super Rugby season. So I just needed a bit of game time, and I thought, you know, after a year of injuries, a change of scenery, go and grow my game, expand it, and enjoy the beautiful weather over here, I guess.
Yeah, in the East Midlands there. Yeah. Obviously, since the Premiership's narrowed it a little bit, and you know, two teams have dropped out, the competition is just, it's ridiculous, isn't it? Like, I think there was 2 points separating eighth from second or something like that on the weekend. You know, obviously not playing in Australia, but you're over there now and you're playing big games every week. Like, it's only got to do wonders for your career.
Yeah. I think the biggest part was coming over here and becoming a better player, for sure. And like you said, I mean, the past 4 games we've had Saracens, we played, who are reigning champs, and we had Munster at home, then we had the Bulls, and then we had Leicester the Derby week. I mean, 4 massive games. Next week, we play at Twickenham against the Quins. Week after, there's a semi in Europe. You know, so like being exposed to those kind of games can't be a bad thing. And yeah, no, I'm absolutely loving it.
Yeah, so it goes without asking, really. You are loving your time over there. I suppose you're thrilled you made the decision to leave the Waratahs when you did.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't an easy decision at all, and sort of probably would have been a bit more comfortable to stay. You know, I knew everyone, all my mates, all my schoolmates, everything were at home, stay with the family. But sort of making the decision and committing to it has been the best thing ever. I mean, I came over with Ali, my partner, and she's loving it as well. It's just also such a life experience. We're an hour away from London. Yeah, we're experiencing such different things, and yeah, no, I'm quite happy.
Has she picked up the English accent as well, mate, or is it just you?
I think she wants it really badly. She's probably a bit more Aussie than I am. Sort of her parents are all very Aussie and her accent's a bit stronger than mine, but she's trying to pick it up.
And, mate, you're only 25, I think, which is a little bit scary, but I dare say you still harbour ambitions to play on the international stage. And as you said, you're playing Twickenham this week after. I think it's a sold out Croke Park of 82,000. Like that, you've arguably that's probably a better stepping stone into international duties than, you know, playing in Australia.
Yeah. I think every player harbors those wants to play international rugby, and it's definitely what I'm after. And to be exposed to this kind of rugby, I think there was 82,000 tickets sold in a day for Croke Park. So I think that atmosphere is probably as close as you'd get. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't know, Matty, you'd know, but I think to play in front of a crowd like that will be such a life experience.
Yeah, so those that don't know, Northampton, rather, to play Leinster, no bigger challenge, but in the European Champions Cup semi-finals. Can you afford to look that far ahead just yet? Because it's still a week and a half. We know the old cliche, it's 1 week at a time, but it's, you know, I imagine that the excitement's already building.
Yeah, I think it's tough not to, but it is important not to as well. I think it was tough when we found out where the semi was going to be and who against that. You acknowledge it, and then you sort of think, okay, we've got Leicester, then we've got the Quins, and then we can think about it. So it's been mentioned, but the focus is definitely on sort of the next games, because we to win these next couple of games would be massive for us in terms of the Premiership.
And what about your future? Is there the possibility of coming back to Australia? Like, you and Matt Tamil would have been teammates for the Wallabies in 2020 rather, but you didn't get on the park. So I imagine that there's still the possibility that you might actually even play for England one day. Is that a thought here? Have you considered what you might do in terms of trying to get onto the international stage?
The way I sort of look at it is that if you take care of sort of your club rugby and you're playing your best rugby, then whatever comes from that does. And I'm absolutely loving the rugby at Saints at the moment. And I mean, any opportunity to play international rugby, I would jump at 100%. But yeah, I think that only comes from playing well with your club and enjoying your rugby and making sure that your focus doesn't sort of drift too far off. You know, successful teams usually get a lot of international players in, and I think if you do well for your club, then you're putting yourself in a good chance for sure.
Yeah, I think it's a really good mindset that you're taking, that you've gone over to Saints for development, you know, to become a better player. And as you said, you're playing Twickenham this weekend, Croke Park the weekend after. Like, that's only ever going to help that. And what will be after that. And would love it if it was in a gold jersey. But do you know the English national anthem? I know they've changed from Queen to King, and that complicates things for a few people.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I'm working on my accent, isn't it? That's what you were saying before. who knows? I mean, like I said, to play on that stage is the ultimate goal. So yeah, we'll hopefully wait and see.
And do you watch much Super Rugby, or do you keep in contact with much things coming back here? I know, you know, it's couple more months and then it's off season. Will you come back home, or what's the go there?
Yeah, I do. I watch a fair bit of the Super Rugby. Do a lot of the snippet highlights. It's sometimes played in, you know, through the night over here. And I keep in touch with a fair few of the Tars boys still. I actually just been over back to Australia for my sister's wedding a month ago, which was really nice. I mean, it was a hit and run job. I was there for a week. So you're just getting over your jet lag and you leave again. But I caught up with a couple of guys there, which was really nice. And I'm always staying in touch with the Aussie rugby. You know, you're always checking the scores. It's something nice. Yeah. But don't think I'll come back in the off season. I mean, I've got all of Europe to travel here. You know, why go home for winter when you've got a European summer?
Yeah, very true. I'll be over there actually in about a month's time. But you've just re-signed as well for Northampton, so you're not going to be coming back anytime soon. How long is the actual deal for?
It's two years, two more. So two more seasons after this one.
Yeah, okay. So easy decision to stay. Matt, you guys, teammates, 2020, what have you noticed, seen about James? And the ability to play fullback is an obvious one. You've spent a fair bit of time there for the Saints so far, but wing as well. What have you noticed, and what did you notice about James back in 2020?
Yeah, I think one of the things I've spoken about a little bit has been the physicality of our back three, which is something that I like, and James obviously brings that. Very dangerous runner, can play in all three positions. And I really do, just speaking to you now, James, like hearing that, you know, that it was a development decision, you know, and kind of taking that step-by-step process or you know, thought towards his development. I think that's really good. And we've seen many guys go overseas, come back. Hopefully he doesn't end up in a white jersey. But in saying that, it would be a little bit nice, you know, for you to get those, to achieve that. But yeah, I think we would love to have someone like him back in a gold jersey in a Lions tour. But yeah, we'll see where it ends up.
And what's it like, James? You've got a pretty exciting back line there, Tommy Freeman and so forth. Is it Finn Smith at 10, Alex Mitchell at 9? Like, it is an exciting back line that when you were at the Tars as well, you know, this was a young team that was just finding their feet. Here you know, there's littered with English internationals in that side that are only going to get more and more experience in that white jersey in the coming years too.
Yeah. No, you're dead right. The back line at the moment is a bit crazy. I mean, and the depth, I think we rested and rotated a couple of boys for this last game, and just to see, you know, if the people who are coming in to play.
All and still put 40 on us too. Jesus.
I wouldn't mention that. But yeah. It is incredible. And playing with those guys makes everything a lot easier for you. I mean, if everyone's doing their own job, the team's going to go well and you're able to sort of shine and do what you want. And the way that Saints play is very much about expressing yourself and going out there and doing what you like to do. The coaches really push that. And I think, yeah, I mean, like you said, it's littered with England internationals, but they're also quite young. Tommy Freeman's low 20s, 23 maybe. Mitch is a year old. Alex Mitchell's not too old. George Furbank's there. Fraser Dingwall. I mean, I think most of the back line's actually capped for England, but they're all quite young. So I think only bodes well for the future, really.
Well, the win over the weekend didn't help McKellar's Tigers, who are, we'll say, languishing in eighth. But as Matt's alluded to, there's not much between them and the finals positions. Did you get the chance to see Dan on the weekend? I imagine he would have been pretty grumpy off the back of that defeat.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I didn't catch him, unfortunately. And yeah, I mean, I think they're, like you said, they're sitting in eighth, but there's only a couple of points from them and second, maybe third now. So I think they've got all to play for the rest of their games. And I mean, yeah, I wish him all the best being another Aussie, but thankful that I don't have to play them again.
And what about Angus Scott-Young? He's another guy that headed over at a similar sort of stage to you. He might have been frustrated not to get an opportunity in that national kind of setup for the Wallabies, but to the two of you, are you instantly best mates because he's the token Aussie there, or because Lucan was there last year? Like, was there someone that you're gravitating towards more?
Yeah, I mean, you hear the Aussie accent in the change room, you do feel a bit more at home for sure. But yeah, Gus and I are really close. He's around most weeks for dinner. He's like an adopted little son.
Are you guys the only two who wear budgies in the change rooms? Because I know the English nudity is just, they're a bit more liberal, aren't they, than we're used to?
Yeah, very. I think that was a bit of a shock. But we're slowly turning them towards the budgies. We've had a couple of Saints budgies drops, which is quite nice. There's a couple.
Yeah, nice, yeah. It's always good when you can, like, tell the lads, oh, I know someone at Budgie who'll sort us out.
Yeah, it makes you feel quite famous, doesn't it?
Oh, if you feel weird, you should come to the onsens in Japan. Jesus, it's there's a lot going on here. I think that's for another show, though, to be fair. But anyway.
Yeah, the roar after dark. Hey, James, really good to have you join. And it's an exciting month ahead for you, exciting next 6 weeks. There's so much rugby, as you said, that's played. But from an Australian speaking to another Australian, he could be turning English at some point in the near future. Good luck. And that opportunity to play at Croke Park, not many players get to experience that in this modern era. And that's going to be an exciting one for you. So hopefully it's a successful one for the Saints.
Yeah, no, thank you very much, guys. I've loved hearing some more Aussie accents.
Thanks, Ram Jam. Appreciate it, mate. And all the best.
Hey, James Ram is a really good guy, good player, former gymnast. There's a lot more we could have touched base on with him, but nice to see.
Former gymnast, why didn't you bring that up?
Well, mate, I don't know how you didn't know that, but it was probably the story that was doing the rounds back in the day. He, as a kid, right throughout, even up until about high school, I think he was on the beams and everything. But
cartwheels. Jesus, good on him.
It's no surprise that he's doing well in the outside backs and finishing tries and had another good role to play on the weekend. Let's touch on the Super W final and hopefully we'll be speaking to one of the players next week, whoever wins that. But the Super W final on Sunday at 2 p.m. up in Ballymore, probably slightly surprising, a little bit interesting, perhaps perplexing that it's up at Ballymore, given that the Waratahs are going to be hosting the Fijiana Drua in a repeat of the 2022 final.
Yeah, it is interesting. It's a really yeah, it's an interesting thing with what's going on in the women's game at the moment. Obviously, with Ballymore being the home of the Wallaroos, you know, we want to start doing that. But at the same time, do you want it to be in Fiji or do you want it to be in, you know, in New South Wales? I'm not sure. But look, I think it's exciting that things are moving in a positive direction. We're seeing a standalone final. We're seeing more and more. And I think it's great for the women and the young girls watching of something to aspire to, for sure.
Yeah. They had a really good win over the Brumbies. The Drua had a win over the Western Force. That's how we end up with these two sides here now, the final two sides. I imagine the Waratahs, I think they're going to be too good for the Drua. They slipped up against them in 2022, but I can't see that happening this time around. They've just been far too clinical, scoring tries for fun. And you know, finals footy, sometimes you can be a bit nervous. They were still far too good for the Brumbies women's side, winning by 20 points, far too good.
Yeah, and I think, look, if the game was over in Fiji, it would be a completely different proposition. It is quite of a weird one, and we're not at the start of the year, say, when, you know, Queensland is probably a little bit like Lau Toko or Suva. It's probably not going to be too hot for New South Wales women. But, I think they won the first three and then they've had a little bit of a break the last couple of years. So I think there'll be a little bit of a chip on the shoulder for the Tars girls. And, it'll be a good game to watch.
Yeah, totally. So they're pretty well in terms of their health, a full bill of health there. Piper Duck, she was in great form today with the announcement that the Wallaroos have a new principal partner in Cadbury coming on board, not just the men but the women. My understanding, it's a deal up until 2029, which is fantastic for the game. It's completely necessary if there's going to be full-time contracts and professionalism come into it. But my understanding is it'll get up towards about $1 million a year. That's a really promising thing for the Wallaroos, because you compare that to only a few years ago where they were having to take time off work, being completely shortchanged, having to rock up to training after work. They didn't even have the coat of arms on the Wallaroos jersey up until about 2017. This is a huge step forward for women's rugby in Australia.
It is, and it's nice seeing. Look, to be fair to Rugby Australia, our women's sevens team really led the way with a lot of professional contracts. Whether you compare it to the NRLW or even cricket or AFLW, you know, our girls were held in such a high esteem. They had an amazing program, but it's probably come at the cost of our 15s program. But having that 2029 World Cup is kind of like an aim point for us, and to see some corporate support now. Once that starts happening, you know, maybe we can start getting a few girls and women from the NRLW into the program, and you know, have that little carrot and can hold us up in high esteem. And as I said, to have some corporate support and some genuine corporate support, not some, you know, companies trying to improve their CSR or whatever, but to have some genuine money behind it is awesome, because we can really start making some headway now.
Yeah, so Phil Waugh, several of the Wallaroos, including Eva Capani, were there today at Allianz Stadium for that announcement. It was a really well put together event, which is pleasing to see. It's those little things that go a long, long way, and for the four Wallaroos that were there, that is just another example of the improvement in quality, I think, across both the men and the women's program.
I would say to the women team, though, don't get too excited, because you don't get that many blocks of chocolate. We got some maybe the first couple of weeks in so Cadbury started sponsoring the Wallabies in, I think, 2020, and we found a few boxes and you know, Taniella and that would hide it, but after that they got banned very, very quickly. But it's very much a financial commitment rather than a free kit or whatever. So it's awesome. Good
That's
stuff.
True. Joe Yap was there, the Wallaroos coach as well. She's excited by what she's seen, and she's pointed towards the improvement over the last week or two in the standard, but she also was a bit I'd say disappointed the fact that the season's just really started to hit its strap and then it's over. But final this weekend, Wallaroos, Pac-4 coming up, an important match against the US. If they win that, they secure World Cup. They secure status in the top league for the women's game, which is really, really important. And it's a big stepping stone ahead of next year's World Cup in England as well. So good things ahead for the women's game. Looking forward to talking more around that final next week. But until then, I think that's a wrap, Matt. Thanks for coming on and farewell to the world's best dad for this week.